Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome back to Are You Fit, a show all about promoting health and instilling togetherness. I'm your host, Michaela. Today, we're going to be talking about the cannabis industry. Whether you want to gain more knowledge in it or if you want to work in the industry, this is the show for you today. So I have definitely brought on a guest speaker, Trey Reckling, who is the founder of the Academy of Cannabis Science, who's going to be able to help us with some of the questions that we're going to have today. So welcome, Trey. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Michaela.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to come on and share with your knowledge. Thank you. I know my listeners have been waiting for something like this, so I'm so glad that you're on tonight. But first off, I just wanted to start the show with asking you to share a little bit about yourself and then why and how you decided to come up with this academy.
Oh, of course. You know, I come to this with about 17, 18 years of higher education experience. So much of my or most of my professional life was in student development, helping them with co-curricular activities, helping them develop the skills that would make them more attractive to employers. And so, it, you know, although it wasn't in marijuana, that's the skill set that I brought to this industry. And that's one of the things we like to talk, and we'll talk about later, but we like to talk to people interested in getting into the industry, is talking about bringing the talents that you have. You know, in my case, I had to do a lot of self-directed study and that sort of thing, because I was living in Savannah, Georgia, and there were no opportunities like Academy of Cannabis Science available to me. You know, where I was living, it was still a state that had a long way to go and still has a long way to go with regard to medical marijuana. They're making progress, but, you know, the people who are really wanting to get involved, it's one of those states where you can feel a little frustrated. So I was fortunate enough, my fiance and I moved out here, fiance at the time, husband now, moved out to Seattle almost 3 years ago, and I had the intention of working in this industry, but I didn't have any leads, honestly. So it was definitely out of passion and a lot of faith that this would work out. And so I've been very fortunate to meet the right, you know, the right people. We started teaching over at University of Washington, teaching an intro to cannabis for people that wanted to get in the industry and didn't know where to start, or for folks that thought they might qualify to be a patient, or maybe they were already a patient and wanted to better understand how medical marijuana could work for them. So that's how we started, was over at UW, and then we talked to the folks at Seattle Central College, and they were already in the business of training, of job training, you know, and training people for trades. They have a hard liquor distillation program, and the another campus, a South Campus, teaches winemaking. So for them, it made a lot of sense. This is, you know, now a legal industry here. So it made a lot of sense to them to do that. We were fortunate enough to be one of the first programs approved by the Department of Health to train medical marijuana professionals here in the state. And so we've been very fortunate. We do that all through e-learning. And so in addition to all the students we've attracted throughout the state, we've also had students from Florida, from Illinois, from Ohio, from Oregon, from Canada, really all over. A lot of people coming to us from areas like I was a part of, you know, where there's no other game in town, sort of thing. So so we've been really grateful to see the interest from all over.
Well, I think that's amazing, Trey, all the way around, just to hear your story. I know I got to hear more of the background, you know, prior to the show, just knowing that you started off just on a whim, not knowing how it was going to be to go over to Seattle, and then to find it just, you know, work itself together. And it's something that's needed. And I think the other positive is that, you know, you guys are able to provide education to people that are not actually in Washington State, that this is an online thing they can do as well. So I think that's really amazing. And for me, leaving Seattle, I miss it so much, and now I'm in a state currently where they're not exactly pro-marijuana or understanding of it. And so to know that you there's an academy like yours out there, hopefully it'll help bridge the gap and, you know, educate more people that are in leadership positions to hopefully open more doors on both angles, you know, for just the cannabis industry in general and the medical side.
I certainly hope so. We, you know, it's not me alone in any way. You know, we're fortunate to be partnered with an accredited state institution, And then also we work with some really top-notch professionals. We've got Dr. Jake Felice. He's a naturopath who specializes in pain management. We have Nicole Lee, who owns the Lee Law Firm, and she specializes in cannabis law. We have Miles Johnard, who's a master grower that works with Solstice and a number of growers throughout our state. And we're lucky enough to also bring on Beatrice Carlini. Beatrice is a senior researcher at the University of Washington's ADAI. It's the Alcohol Drug Abuse Institute. So she's done research for a long time and is world-renowned in talking about the risks and the possible rewards, of course, of cannabis. So we got a team that's raring to go. So I'm fortunate every day to get to work with people like this.
Nice. Love it. Well, before we get into what the Academy of Cannabis Science offers, I want to just touch on cannabis in general. And since you do have a lot of background in this, I wanted to see if you wouldn't mind touching on some of the common myths that are out there about cannabis and the industry in general.
Oh, good question. You know, when I came out here, I was susceptible to some of those myths too. And you know, looking at this from a distance, you know, looking at Seattle from Savannah, you know, could seem like Mars with regard to marijuana because the approach was so different. I expected to see what other people might expect to see, you know, maybe some cannabis blight, so to speak, you know, like you may expect around some liquor stores or things like that where you see intoxicated consumers or, you know, people who are, I don't know, negatively affected by marijuana on the street or, you know, that sort of thing. And it really has not been like that at all. Yeah, you know, we find a very responsible consumer base here. We have a lot of tourists, so sometimes the tourists are the ones in need of a little bit of nudging and saying, hey, well, you know, you're not supposed to consume that in public. Could you at least, you know, go downwind of us and that sort of thing? But generally, people are very responsible consumers, and so that's been good to see. You know, that the negative effects or the effect that some people might expect to see on the street is not what they would expect. You know, studies have shown that more kids are not using marijuana as a result. Some people also think that medical marijuana is just a bunch of people getting high. And so, you know, I'll be the first to say that I work with patients on a daily basis and the people that serve them. And, you know, if there's any question about medical marijuana being a real therapy, you know, I would hope that before somebody made that judgment, they would talk to somebody whose life it has improved or even, you know, who that person considers they've saved their own life with it. We talked to a number of people who are cutting back on opiates, have been through drug dependency issues with other substances, and are, you know, feeling healthier as a result of the shift. You know, I myself don't take any prescription medicines anymore, and I'm a patient myself. So, you know, I don't take Vicodin for pain if I have, you know, if I re-injure my back, and I don't take anxiety medicine that I used to be able to lean on when things would get stressful at work or, you know, I would need that sort of thing. So, you know, fortunately for me, marijuana works. And so, you know, I think that's one of those myths that's out there. And, you know, and then I guess other people that just believe that this is the marijuana business is just a bunch of people sitting around getting high during the day and not working. And so I'm sure there's some of that. I myself have worked for a place with a weed-friendly policy. We had a bong in the office and the whole thing. I worked for a tourism industry. Yeah, I worked for a tourism company for a while, and they're doing great work and trying to, you know, encourage responsible use and education while people are visiting. So they would tour people through a professional grow and help them see some glass blowing going on and, you know, take them to a few places around the town. But yeah, behind the scenes, we had a cannabis-friendly workplace. As long as you got your work done, it was a small office, but people were, you know, good, responsible use. So it's not like that everywhere, but I think what people might expect from a distance is a lot more Cheech and Chong, and that's not what I've experienced.
Yes. I'm so glad you pointed that out, Trey, because I was just going to say Cheech and Chong. God bless those guys. I love them for bringing it out in the open. But yes, I think there's still that stigma of the whole typical pothead. And, you know, going back in Seattle, most of the people that I knew that were utilizing, they were responsible citizens. So I'm mm-hmm. glad that, you know, you pointed that out. And then also, you know, about the whole opiate stuff, because that is huge right now going on in America, is the opiate addiction and the heroin addiction. And to know that I'm not very familiar with all of this and how marijuana is helping to decrease it, but I'm just saying, you know, here it is actually a true epidemic. And here we've got on the other side that cannabis is actually medically beneficial, not a drug, not something that you should be criminalized for. So just opening those doors more up. So I know you kind of touched a little bit on a truth, but I wanted to see, were there any other facts or truths that you think people don't really know about that you wanted to put out there today?
Well, the opiate one is one in the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And, you know, I think just getting some people to have a conversation about this, because we're not out to, you know, we're not out to proselytize in a way that we're trying to, well, we are in a way, you know, we want people to give the conversation a chance, you know, to talk to some people who, like I said, it's working for them. In this environment, it's really unique because, you know, we laugh and say, if you throw a rock here, you hit a grower, because so many people have grown up in this culture where it's not as big of a deal. It's been decriminalized for a long time, not legal like it is now. But, you know, a lot of citizens in this area, they know somebody who grew growing up, or their parents did, or, you know, the whole concept is just not as new to them. So, we're further, I think, from the taboo, and people are a little bit more, you know, willing to engage it as a viable adult option. You know, we were in line for a show the other night, and we're standing at will call for tickets, and the senior citizen couple in front of us, one turned to the other, and there were three people actually, and, you know, one person turned to the other two, and she said, "Look, if they don't have our tickets, we'll just go home and drink that bottle of wine, and I have some really nice weed. We can roll a couple joints and just sit around and talk. That would be nice too." You know, and these are folks that are in their late 60s, early 70s, and it was just a natural part of the conversation. So that sort of thing is really nice to see. You know, like you said, all love to Cheech and Chong and High Times and everybody who's brought us here. But, you know, like we talk about here, cannabis is probably the most diverse community I've ever been part of. And, you know, coming from higher education, that's not always easy to say, but, you know, cannabis crosses gender lines, crosses race and age lines and philosophies. And so it's really nice to see things working. Not everything's perfect, but, you know, it's one thing when some other things get tense, it's one thing that some groups of people can agree on. You know, they might not agree on politics or whether to go to church on Sunday or what kind of food they like or how to raise their kids, but this is one, you know, this is the one thing they can agree on, and you know, they also hope that other people will give it some time. So
nice to see something that can unify each other, even with all of our differences. Well, and besides, I also wanted to touch on the fact that it's not just about the medical industry. That's just one industry that cannabis reaches. I mean, there's so many other avenues that this hemp plant can provide for in industrial ways. And so, you know, do you have anything to say on that besides the medical piece of this?
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, Washington was just Oregon's already planting hemp, and I think Virginia and several other places. Washington has just put its first crop of industrial hemp back in the ground now after Prohibition. And so, you know, the hemp farmers are hugely excited because, you know, as you probably know, they can make hemp bricks now. They make hempcrete, and it's a fire-resistant product you can make a home out of. You know, of course, textiles and clothing, ropes, all the traditional uses, but foodstuffs, everybody, you know, there's a bunch of interest in CBD right now. So CBD is produced by hemp. It's non-intoxicating. But, you know, we would urge anybody experimenting or looking into CBD products to make sure that they source them from American companies who use organic or at least really, really low pesticide farming practices. Some people are buying products from overseas that aren't tested as carefully. And when you're talking about taking an extracted product, you want to make sure they're also not consuming heavy metals and other things that might not be tested for that would be tested for and protected. People work to protect citizens here. So yeah, hugely excited about hemp. It's going to and it's probably the sleeping giant. That industry might end up being bigger than cannabis is, cannabis proper is. So we'll see
where that goes. Okay, so I want to get into what the Academy does have to offer, but since we were just touching on hemp too, is that some of the classwork that you guys also teach on, or is it strictly more of like medical cannabis stuff?
Yeah, strictly right now we started teaching the medical marijuana certification course. So that's if you, in our state, if you want to work in retail, in a shop that has medical marijuana, in order to work with those patients, engage the patient database and that sort of thing, you need to have these certified people on staff. So that's where we started and that's where we focused. Now we've also branched out. We're teaching legal compliance seminars for healthcare providers and retailers. We're teaching ethics of medical marijuana. We're teaching pain management, cannabis products for massage therapy, for instance, is a new one for us. So we have a massage therapist that uses what they call CHABA or cannabis helped and beauty aids. And these are products that are so low in THC that they cannot make you intoxicated, and they're a topical, so they're not intended to be subdermal anyway. So we're getting a nice mix of courses. We're adding growing cannabis at home here soon, and that'll be a class that's new this summer and focusing on those people who are legally allowed to grow their own little mini crops at home. So if people are doing that, we want them to do it legally, to understand what their limits are, to understand how to do that in a way that's going to produce safe medicine, especially if they're doing anything to extract that, or if they're taking it on a daily basis. We want to make sure that they're growing good, clean products. So right now, we've only been officially around working with them as a cannabis institute for a little over a year. So we're really excited to get this kind of steam built up in that short amount of time, and the kind of interest that we've seen. Like I said, well outside of the state even.
Well, I love the fact that, even though this is just the beginning of the Academy, I mean, all the years behind it is, up and coming in the making, and just to see the growth in the future, what you guys are doing. And I think it's important. It's good to hear about you having this certification for people that are consulting with patients, because that gives you, at least to me anyways, a peace of mind. I think sometimes when people think about you going in there to these dispensaries, you've just got like Joe Blow, saying, oh yeah, it's the perp, Casey Jones, is like just random stuff, but you can actually, them actually being trained, this is why and this is what it's for, you can have a lot more, I don't know what the word is at the moment, but just you can feel confident in the medicine that you're getting,
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people get frustrated when they go into a hardware store and feel like the customer service person doesn't know anything about hardware, or doesn't know how to help you. Boy, how much more frustrating when you're dealing with something that's regarding your health, and the advice you're getting can make the difference of you having a positive experience or having a very negative or even scary experience. So we think it's critical, and it reduces liability for the shop. It improves the reputation of the industry, and then everybody's lifted up. We've really suffered under 70 plus years of the darkness of prohibition and bad propaganda and bad information.
Yes.
So we're really, we're kind of fighting that battle on a daily basis. And luckily, the public is very engaged. Journalists are really interested in getting the word out. Some people, I think, grow weary of all the marijuana talk. But if you think about it, it's been bottled up. It's like that I Dream of Jeannie episode where she gets out of the bottle for the first time in years and years and just has so much to say. And so, I think about that. People haven't been able to even talk openly about this. So for someone to say, I've used marijuana for over 10 years and this is how it helps me, and I can say this without worrying about you putting me in jail or taking away my home or my kids or firing me at work or excluding me from church or my civic organization I'm part of. You know, so that's huge. And I think some of the most convincing stories don't even come from professionals working in the industry. They come from people's grandmothers and their sisters and, you know, people dealing with depression and opiates, like you said, dealing with chronic pain, PTSD, you know, people in really serious need of a life, an ability to change their lives. And that's what we get to see. It's not a, you know, it's certainly not a, a cure-all. And so we want to make sure that, that people like you're talking about working in rec stores aren't leading people to expect more than they should at the same time.
Right.
So, yeah, that's, we think it's critical. And it's about the reputation of the industry and ultimately it's about people's health. So, you know, as Tommy Chong himself says, he believes that all marijuana use is medical, you know, and other people have made that point that, you know, even if you're not taking it for chronic pain or PTSD, you're probably taking it with the intention of relaxing or calming down or reducing a little stress in your life. And you know, some people would argue that's certainly medical use. So we want people to have information and good, you know, everything we do is science-based. We're not here to convert people based on what we believe. It's funny. People are quick to say that, well, we need more research. And that's a lot of times the knee-jerk reaction, you know, maybe from people who are not confident about whether this is a good idea for society to legalize and make it more available. And so a lot of people say, well, we need more research. And they're right. You know, we absolutely do. But if you look on you know, if you look online and you use the search for medical research, like on the National Institutes of Health website, you'll find tens of thousands of research efforts that have already happened around marijuana or cannabis, you know, more specifically to use a proper term. But, you know, so the research is out there. I think one of the biggest challenges for us and our students is staying current. Because very much like a tech job, this is not something I think you'll be able to learn and say, well, I know what I need to know, because stuff is changing all the time and we're getting more information every week or, you know, every day, depending on what you're looking for. So so that's I think that's part of the challenge, is just staying on top of the information.
Right, it is updating all the time. Well, the other things that came to mind about classes and you're talking about what you offer, I wonder, do you guys also talk about, besides growing the plant, any form of medibles and recipes, you know, or other options than just taking it in by, like, a vaporizer or smoking it? Do you have classes that show on that? And then I also wanted to ask, do you have anything in regards for, like, pet therapy, like, classes?
Oh, good question. And in a couple different of our courses, we offer discussions certainly about the different delivery methods, because, you know, some people just think that you can smoke it or vape it, and we know that, and we know that there are edibles, but some people aren't aware. I mean, the market is so creative. We have meltaways, like breath strips that you'd put on your tongue. We have lozenges, gums. We have oral sprays people can use, tinctures. Now there are also pain patches, just like you would buy from a pharmacy for, you know, an NSAID type of medicine, like an aspirin or ibuprofen. There are pain patches. We have, they have suppositories. So those are particularly helpful for people with Crohn's or who are suffering with a lot of nausea and feel like they can't keep an edible down. And so, you know, I mean, there are even lubricated sex, infused sex lubes now available on the market too. So I'm making grand, you know, grand claims, but, you know, people are really trying to be creative when they're looking at delivery. So we do talk about that. We don't yet have our cooking with cannabis class out, but we're in development talking about that. We also, pets and cannabis, you mentioned, is huge. And, you know, people love their pets. Right now, the American Veterinary Association is not willing to go there. They're not willing to endorse cannabis. It's still federally scheduled as, you know, Schedule One, supposedly most dangerous. You know, there is, they would say, or make the argument, there's no medical benefit from cannabis, and we know that's not true. So, but that, you know, that thins some professional groups' enthusiasm and makes them be a lot more cautious. That said, the same thing's happening like it is in people medicine. We're getting some very brave vets who are veterinarians who are willing to talk about this. I was just on the phone earlier this week with somebody who runs a national in-home euthanasia service for animals. And so, you know, they deal a lot with animals at the end of their lives and in chronic pain or in really bad situations. And, you know, she couldn't have been more enthusiastic. In that case, we certainly need a lot more research and we need a lot more science to back up, you know, these vets who are willing to be brave. But I saw it myself. We had a senior dog 2 years ago, had a major stroke, and we took her to the vet and he said, this is what it is. And she's had a stroke and she's going to experience neurological damage if we can't get the swelling on her brain down. And knowing the industry I was in, he said, if you're willing to try to figure out her dose, he said, I can't provide any marijuana for you. But he said, if you think you can figure out her dose, we can maybe save her life. And we did. And she lived for 2 more years. And but it worked unlike, he said, I haven't seen anything like this. He said, you know, anything I had available, I couldn't have hoped for her to respond as well as she has to marijuana. And so, you know, I saw it firsthand, and one case does not make valid science, but that was about as up close and personal as you can be to me. And, you know, I saw what it did for her. And so, you know, we're really hopeful. We are developing, and that's why I was talking to the vet in Florida who was helping me get networked a little bit with some of her professional friends. So we're working on a pets and cannabis class. We're going to, you know, mostly talk about the promises, about the risks. We do have, you know, there have been peaks in areas that have legalized with, there have been peaks, emergency room visits and poison control calls about animals that get into edibles. And that's, you know, that's really dangerous when a lot of those edibles contain chocolate, you know, which might be more dangerous to the pet than the cannabis is. But it's certainly scary as an owner if your pet gets into something like that. So we want to, you know, we certainly want to teach owners a little bit about what they can expect, how to keep their pets safe, and what are some things on the horizon that might be able to help their pets. We do have some tinctures and other pet-safe products here that, you know, I think that potential market is just huge because people love their pets as much as their kids often and, you know, won't spare resources to make sure that they're healthy as well.
Agreed. Well, okay, Trey, so these are my next questions for us. I wanted to ask you, well, I mean, this does seem like a no-brainer, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Like, who do you believe would benefit from attending the academy or even so far what you've seen from your students? And then could you describe kind of like what your programs are like or how people would go about it? Like, are they short-term? Like, I just don't even know how this works. So if you can give a mini breakdown on this.
Oh, sure. You know, like I said, we originally expected that we would have this kind of narrow population part of the population interested in this. And this would be retail marijuana, people working in retail marijuana, wanting to serve the medical marijuana public. But we have seen graphic designers, nurses, other healthcare professionals. We've seen accountants. We've seen people who are in packaging. We've seen a great variety of students who say, look, you know, I want to work in retail, or no, I don't. I don't have any interest in standing on my feet that long or working that closely with the public. My sweet spot is X. And so we see a lot of people making career changes or trying to open up their client base a little bit by understanding, you know, this segment of the population. So that's what's real interesting to me. I get contacted pretty frequently now by people who say, hey, I want to do that. I want to be involved in some way. And we try to remind people, you don't have to be a professional grower. You don't have to work in retail. The industry needs so much. We need so much infrastructure. We probably need the skill you already have, but we want to help you make it transferable to cannabis. you know, whether it's nice. Human resources, staffing, you name it. And those are the people who've we haven't even marketed for, but they've shown us that that's the need. So that's the exciting part. So with that, I think we've seen them because we make delivery really easy. For the Cannabis Academy, it's run through continuing education. So that means our students don't have to apply to the college. They would take this like they would any other certification or continuing education course. It's all online. So as long as you have an internet connection, you can take our classes. I know you have the links to to the school, but it's just the simple one is learn@central.org/cannabis. And then, you know, somebody can go in and see our growing list of classes there. But, you know, being online, it's really nice, but it's not I remind people, it's not a robot class. We're very high touch. I communicate with students on a daily basis. We have assignments that require them to mix and communicate, you know, where they're from, why they're interested in this, what cannabis has meant to them, what have they believed versus what they've learned. Try to involve them in some good discussions about the people they're going to be working with. So we talk a lot about listening skills and empathy, and because, you know, we remind them they're not going to have an answer for everybody. It's, you know, a large part of it is helping a patient find out what works for them. So the more we can help that medical marijuana consumer understand what's best for them and help them to explore what, you know, whether using a dosing journal or helping reconnect them with a healthcare professional that's a little bit more willing to talk about this, you know, all that type of thing. So, but as far as getting in enrolled, it's pretty simple. We have a rolling enrollment, so that means you don't have to hit a particular deadline. As you know, a person can enroll in mid-quarter and still get the work done, or if it's, you know, emerging the end of the quarter, we might encourage somebody to go ahead and sign up for the next. But otherwise, it's we make it real simple for folks, and we do work with a lot of professionals who are already working a 40-plus hour week, and just like I said, they want to make themselves more attractive as a candidate to either work directly in the industry or to work with the industry.
Well, I love all of that, Trey, and one of the things that I like that you pointed out, how so many different professionals from different industries are going to this academy, is like truly the doors are wide open. I mean, because when you talk about it, you need everybody from anywhere. It's just tailored to cannabis. I mean, so that just really opens the door for anybody that wants to come in this. I like that. And then we did talk about this, that it is pretty affordable, the different classes and programs that you offer.
Right. So our CEU courses, for instance, you know, run about $20 to $25 per credit hour. And boy, I would challenge you to find a college course. It's comparably priced. I think, you know, for what we offer and the level of professionalism, it's a great deal and a good investment. And, you know, whether or not somebody wants to do this as their life work, or they want to better, you know, some of the people coming to us want to better understand how to be a caregiver. You know, their parent, their grandparent, their spouse, their child even is a potential candidate for cannabis making their life more bearable. And so we see some of those folks too who say, look, I want to know if this is a viable option for us. I want to, when I go in to see my physician, I want to know as much as I can know, so I can ask educated questions. And so, you know, some people we can help with knowledge that we can't help source stuff because they're just in a state where you can't do this yet. But some of those same people will make the trip to a neighboring state and do a little vacation, you know, and try it out and say, hey, is this something that could work for me? You know, I want to be ahead of the curve. And so when my state goes online, maybe this is something I need to advocate for a little bit more strongly. So, and we've gotten, you know, it's interesting. I got a call from, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I got a call just a couple of weeks ago from a college in California, and they said, we want to do what you guys are doing up there, but it takes a while for all this to get rolling, and we really want to do it tomorrow because they're getting ready to build a huge facility here, and we want to train workers. And so that's the nice thing too, is you know, we're talking to other colleges. So if anybody listening to this program is part of a college that would like to offer this sort of thing, the additional thing we can offer them is to help them just get this rolling right out the gate with, you know, associations with good professional people. So we're looking, you know, we're looking to grow the reach and, you know, help bring this even closer to where people live and, you know, to bring to some people's alma mater. So we're excited about those opportunities as well.
I love it. I mean, just bit by bit, we'll get there. Well, we got about 10 more minutes left, Trey, but I wanted to just ask you, is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners before we did go?
That's a good question. You know, I think I would encourage anybody to reach out to me if you're hearing this and would you like more information, not to sell you on being a student, but sometimes we can connect you with somebody in your neighborhood, in your area. There's good work going on all over the country, and you know, we're just really grateful because we recognize we're literally standing on the, well, maybe not literally, but we're standing on the shoulders of giants to do this work. We know a lot of people have taken a lot of risks for many years, and so for us to even be able to have this conversation today is fantastic, and so we're so grateful to those researchers, those pioneers, those people who have taken risks to get us even this far, and so, you know, we're grateful for that. So, you know, I would encourage people to just to listen and really look at what's the source material, because, you know, as popular as the topic is, it's easy to fall into clickbait. You know, I saw something earlier this week, unfortunately, that came out of the UK following the terrorist attacks, and it wanted to tie cannabis use to terrorism, you know, and that sort of thing.
God.
I hope that we had left. You know, I hope we had left that behind in our own racist past of the drug war. You know, this started with, in some ways, started with Harry Anslinger back, you know, the beginning of last century and demonizing people for using the substance. And we don't want to go backwards. You know, we're there's light in the truth, and you know, we want to be purveyors of truth. So I would always encourage people to make sure they know where their information's coming from. And don't believe it on the flip side either. You know, we have some true believers that would want to convince people that no matter what they're ill, that they can save themselves. And it's scary to me to think that some people might take their friends' medical advice and not ask a doctor and start treating themselves. You know, because that's certainly not what we want either. And that you know, that can jeopardize people's lives. So we want people to be smart about this. And if they're, you know, if they they might have a physician who's not ready to talk about this or not willing to talk about this. I was notified by a patient last week and said, you know, I tried to have a conversation with my doctor about marijuana, and he walked me out of the office, said, I can't talk to you about that, and got really just spooked acting. And so, you know, I want to remind people, some people will have experiences like that, but keep trying. Keep looking for those people who are knowledgeable, who are certified, who have good professional advice, because there's certainly other opinions out there. Whether you live in Oklahoma or Seattle or, you know, Washington or Florida, there are friendlies about, and so we'd love to try to connect people when we can.
That's awesome. Well, Trey, I just wanted to again say thank you so much for taking the time to come on here and share your knowledge with my listeners and just everything that you're doing. I don't even want to call this a movement per se, but I mean, it truly is. I mean, this is a long time coming, and everybody that's helping to push this positive thing out there, I definitely wanted to say thank you to that.
No, absolutely. Like I said, we're really fortunate to do what we're doing, and in any way we can help your listeners, you know, let us know, and encourage people to vote. The only way this happens, you know, this has only happened, I think, so far because voters have said, this is what it, the way it needs to go. So we'd encourage people to get involved politically, and then also, you know, patronize professional organizations, whether it's NORML, the MJBA, or a more regional group like the Cannabis Alliance here. Those folks do great work and can help you get connected to the industry like none other.
Agreed. Well, listeners, I just wanted to say thank you again for taking the time to listen to this show. I hope it helped in some way. Definitely share it with your network. Trey doesn't need to toot his own horn, but I'm just going to pass along that, you know, he was involved with serving on the board of directors for the Washington Marijuana Association, and he's currently on the education committee for the Cannabis Alliance. And so to learn more about him, you know, I've got some stuff on the show description. There's some articles written here from Forbes and Dope Magazine. And again, the links to the Academy of Cannabis Science, all is on here as well. So with that, Trey, thank you again for coming on. Listeners, thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week. Big, big hugs. Take care.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.